might actually do us some good. Us. Them. Slip of the tongue. We passed into a well-lit area with wide windows overlooking the lake. The behemoth was being loaded with capsules, the dorsal surface of the manta-like machine still bright with the thrusters it had to burn to hold this position. Each pod was sterilized by being passed through a ring of purple flame before being accepted into the behemoth's belly. Maybe the city didn't care what came into it, but the outside universe certainly seemed to care what left it. I suppose you have some idea how we get to the city from here? There's really only one way, I gather, and that's the chasm city Zephyr. Quirrenbach and I brushed past the palanquin, moving slowly down the next connecting tunnel. The upright box was patterned in bas-relief black, showing scenes from the city's vainglorious past. I risked a glance back as we overtook the slow-moving machine, and my gaze met the fearful eyes of the hermetic sitting within, face pale behind thick green glass. There were walking servitors carrying luggage, but there was something primitive about them. They were not sleek intelligence machines, but clunking error-prone robots with about as much sentience as a dog. There were no genuinely clever machines left now, outside of the orbital enclaves where such things were still possible. But even the crude servitors that remained were obviously valued, signs of residual wealth. And then there were the wealthy themselves, those traveling without the sanctuary of palanquins. I presumed none of these people had implants of any great complexity, certainly nothing that might be susceptible to plague spore. They moved nervously in hurried packs, surrounding themselves with servitors. Ahead, the tunnel widened into an underground cavern, dimly lit by hundreds of flickering lamps burning in sconces. There was a steady warm breeze blowing through it, carrying a stench of machine oil. And something enormous and bestial waited in the cavern. It rode four sets of double rails arranged around it at intervals of 90 degrees, one set below the machine, one above, and one on either side. The rails themselves were supported by a framework of skeletal braces, though at either end of the cavern they vanished into circular tunnels, where they were anchored to the walls themselves. I couldn't help but think of the trains in the Santiago, which had featured in one of Sky's dreams, braced within a similar set of rails, even though those rails had only been guidance ways for induction fields. This wasn't like that. The train itself was constructed with a four-way symmetry. At the center was a cylindrical core, tipped with a bullet-shaped prow and a single cyclopean headlight. Judging from this core were four separate double rows of enormous iron wheels, each of which contained 12 axles and was locked onto one of the pairs of rail lines. Three pairs of huge cylinders were interspersed along each set of 12 main wheels, each connected to four sets of wheels by a bewildering arrangement of gleaming pistons and thigh-thick greased articulated cranks. A massive pipe run snaked all around the machine. Whatever symmetry or elegance of design it might have had was ruined by what appeared to be randomly placed exhaust outlets, all of which were belching steam up towards the cavern's ceiling. The machine hissed like a dragon whose patience was wearing fatally thin. It seemed worryingly alive. Behind was a string of passenger cars built around the same fourfold symmetry, engaging with the same rails. "That's the Chasm City Zephyr," Quirrenbach said. "Quite a beast, isn't she?" "You're telling me that thing actually goes somewhere?" "It wouldn't make much sense if it didn't." I gave him a look, so he